Accession number 10048, reel number 3.
Mr. Tate, reel 3, what did this castle look like?
Well, what I remember of it was a huge big castle, and it stood in the centre of a lake with a causeway leading over to it.
What was the inside like?
Well, I wasn't inside. It was left to officers to go in and interrogate the German high command who were there. All we had to do was just surround the area of land all around beyond this lake.
Were there many German troops around?
Yes, quite a number of German troops, but they were all under British Army command, and they were still armed. In fact, on the way up to Flensburg from Lübeck, there was an SS unit still didn't lay down their arms after the war was declared finished. The sections of the German army that were now under British command had to go and fight their own SS to get them to lay down their arms. And I don't think that very many people know that, but that is fact.
Did you see the German VIPs who were arrested, who were taken?
No. Only from the distance. You could see them coming out and taken into cars and being driven away. But there was German naval establishment there, and we had one side of the road, and the German Navy were on the other side, still armed, but doing duties, but under British command. So it was rather strange that a few days earlier they were on opposite sides, and then after the 8th of May we were on the same side. And the German Army commander and the Navy commander, British command.
Did you come into contact with the Soviet troops?
Yes. I was in the army until November. The war finished in May, and I was in the army until November, in Flensburg, up in the Danish border. And we were given the task of handling displaced persons, German service people coming down from Denmark and Norway for documentation and transportation back to their own homeland areas in Germany. And there were all nationalities in Flensburg, displaced people, a lot of Poles, and for some reason or other we got the job of providing transport always at 2 o'clock in the morning to take them back to Lübeck. And we had about 20 miles to go inside the Russian lines east from Lübeck to where there was this field with a railway and a train sitting there, and these truckloads of people we had were offloaded onto these trains. We had Russian officers, or maybe NCOs, come to Flensburg to help in the roundup and the interrogation of these displaced people, and then all we had to do was provide transport. And I remember one occasion, one displaced person, a man, he was argumentative and he wasn't going to get onto this truck. And this Russian officer shot him there and then, killed him. That was what he got for being argumentative.
Did you see that?
Yes, I was there when that happened.
How long was he arguing with him for?
Oh, maybe just less than just minutes, just about something or other. I don't know why or what it was about. But there were poor people. It might, I don't know what they would have been arguing about. It might have been because he was leaving family or maybe something other. And a lot of these people had German ration cards, which once were onto our trucks and knew where they were going, they were throwing these ration cards over the side to other people who had been left behind, perhaps thinking that this ration card would be of use to them. And on one occasion, we got this loads of people and we took them away into this zone in Russia where this field was and this railway siding. 3 days after having been there previously with another load, the people were still on that train. The train hadn't gone away with them anywhere. They were just on that train. That was 3 days later when we went back with another party. The previous party was still there in that field.
Could you see what condition they were in?
They were in the wagon, so we just couldn't see them very well. But we were able to know that they were the same people. So I suppose the train wouldn't move until they got a full load, but where they were to be taken to, that I don't know.
Did the displaced persons show any reluctance to be sent eastwards?
Yes, they didn't want to go east. And I suppose this one that I saw being shot was an example to others to move quickly.
What kind of reaction was there from the British troops when they saw it? When they saw the shooting?
Well, they thought it was awful, but there's nothing they could do about it. A lot of them were pretty hardened to it anyway. Now, there was marauding gangs or displaced persons going about the countryside, lonely German farms. They get a farmer and his family and string them up in the farmyard. There would be rope around their neck and hung them up. So that was one of the jobs we got to do too, was go out sometimes and round up these marauding gangs of displaced persons. I suppose they thought they were maybe getting their own back. They had such a hatred of the Germans.
How many of these hanged men did you see?
The most I saw in one line was 3 at one time.
On how many occasions did you see them?
Twice. On 2 different occasions at farms.
So one was a group of 3?
It was 3.
And the other one was?
I couldn't tell you now, but I distinctly see there's 3 still hanging.
Were they all men?
No, one was a woman. I should say it also, this is much further back now, Belsen. You know Belsen concentration camp? I should have mentioned that earlier.
Did you go into Belsen?
To the gates. We were making an advance on the river Aller. And the German officer came over to our officers to say about this camp. And they didn't want any fighting to take place in the area of the camp because there were about 60,000 inmates in Belsen, and the place was rife with typhus fever. And an agreement was made that if we avoided that area, the Germans would give us free access to a bridge over the river instead of having to ford the river. So with that, we were all injected up our pants and down our shirts and everything with flea powder all over our bodies because of this Belsen camp that we were coming to. So eventually we got over the river, and of course I didn't know it was quite so near Belsen, but it was nice and quiet and everything was halted. And I was sitting down there writing out a funny story that I had heard when I was home on leave. And I was sitting there making a copy of it when this woman came up, and an awful looking sight. and she was indicating to me to follow, and I didn't know what this was. But anyway, I told her to get on, go, and I would follow. So it was only a short distance, and there was an underground sort of basement hut, and in there, and it was full of people, but they couldn't move. They were absolutely terrible. So I didn't go any further. I came back and got an officer, and I told him. Well, he says, we're in the area right in Belsen Camp, and that's what you've come, he says, one bit of it.
Had you heard of concentration camps before you came across this?
Yes, but I didn't know that we were in the vicinity of one just so near, and I didn't know. I was just sitting writing out this funny story in the vicinity of one of them. And later on, we came across a whole bunch of male inmates from Belsen. Every one of those men had the bone removed from the left arm, about 3 or 4 inches of bone. Every one of them, the left hand was just hanging down limp. There was no bone. So the German army medical people had removed the bone from every one of them. What a thing to do. And they all had a number tattooed into their, they were all identified by a number.
How many of these men were there who had had the bone removed?
I would say a bunch, 25, maybe 30, I guess, something like that. There may have been a whole lot more.
Where were they exactly?
In the vicinity of the camp, because we didn't get to go into the camp. That was left to special troops to go in. But these men may have been around outside. Obviously they were when I saw them.
Did they speak to you?
No. Language. I don't know what they would be. Might have been Poles, German Jews, that I don't know.
Did they attempt to communicate with you in any way?
Yes, they did. But previous to that, they had been in contact with authority, British authorities.
What did they try to communicate to you?
Well, they were able to tell me about all having this bone removed, and they let me see the tattoo by the German medical authorities.
You mean they explained to you in sign language?
To a certain extent, yes. You couldn't have a conversation with them.
But could they speak any English?
Yes, just a little words here and there, and sign language, and able to convey that they were from Belsen and what had happened to them. But why they were there, that I don't know.
Did they ask you for food?
No.
Can you describe what the appearance of the Belsen victims was like?
Yes, it was just down in this steps down, in this long place with beds, and they're all lying there, but I didn't go inside. What always sticks in my mind was the appalling stench, and these people just lying there sprawling in their rags.
And did they look as emaciated as we see on the television screen?
Yes. Oh, yes, very much so. Just starved and ill and not able to move. Some of them were dying every day.
As you went through Germany, what was your attitude towards the German civilians? Did you fraternize with them at all?
No, that was forbidden. Fraternization was forbidden by the British troops and the civilian population.
Even at first, when you first went into Germany?
Yes, and all the few months that I was in Flensburg after the war finished, there was still no fraternization officially. But I do know that some of them did.
Did the Germans, civilians, try to fraternize with you?
Yes.
In what way?
Well, they were very friendly, but I think perhaps maybe with a feeling of guilt, knowing that what their country had done to people. I always had a feeling that if they'd been winning, they would have been different. But on the whole, I did like the German people.
Why was that?
From what the ones we had to deal with, such as transport, food supplies and things like that, we seemed to get on quite well with them. And the German army too, once they came under our control.
Did they seem to be like British people or different?
No, very much like British. Far more so than the French people. Lots of their ways were British, in fact Scottish. Yes.
What specifically?
Well, in their attitudes, the things they would say, the way they would work.
Can you give some examples?
Well, to begin with, when we got to Flensburg, they were starving because German communications were absolutely nil. And when the war ended, the responsibility for feeding thousands and thousands of German civilians fell in the British hands. And I remember a field of turnips somewhere in Schleswig Holstein. We got a 1,500 weight truck of turnips and took him into this town of Flensburg and just tipped him up at a square. There was a line of trees down the middle of the square, I can remember. And the people came for a turnip, two or three turnips, and they seemed to be so grateful to be able to get these turnips to boil and make themselves some food.
Was there any temptation on the part of British troops to take it out on the Germans because of what they saw at Belsen?
Not that I know of. Not in our unit, anyway.
When you got the orders not to fraternise with the German civilians, did people obey those orders, or was it difficult to obey them?
They obeyed these orders, mostly. There would be times, I think, maybe when there might have been a little bit of fraternisation, but they didn't need to be caught or they would have been in trouble.
Did you know of anybody who was punished for fraternising?
No, I didn't know anyone in our unit.
Do you know if the Americans and French troops had similar orders or not?
Yes, I think it was all through the Allied armies that there would be no fraternisation. That is probably an order that came from the Allied High Command, Eisenhower.
Did you see much of the Americans?
Very little. Saw more of the Canadians. I remember one time in Normandy, we had gone so far, Carpiquet, near Bayeux, and the Canadians passed through our lines to take this village of Carpiquet. And then the next time, before the advance on the Rhine, one of our armoured brigades, and I went with them, we were posted to the Canadian Army, and we came under Canadian Army command from Holland until the Rhine crossing, which I missed because I was home on leave that time. I came home on leave from being under Canadian Army command.
What did you think of the Canadians as a fighting?
I liked the Canadians very much.
Why was that?
Well, they seemed to be so friendly and very generous.
Did they have more than the British troops?
Yes, I think so. The Americans were also very the ones that we did meet. Sometimes we came across Americans, they were very keen to get souvenirs, anything German, as if they couldn't go and get it for themselves.
Did you ever sell them souvenirs?
Yes. This is a funny thing. It's about a set of dinner dishes. Who had them, or where they came from, I cannot say. I don't know. But some of these Americans were buying these dishes off the British lads because they'd been spun some sort of yarn as to whose place or who they belonged to. I don't know why I should remember that little bit, but that was it.
You mean that they'd invented a story about where they'd
about,
come
about from? I think so. Invent a story about where these this dinner set had come from.
Was there any tendency to loot the German homes?
Any tendency
to rob the Germans? To rob the German civilians? To loot them?
Yes, I think there would be. Because I have seen instances of houses being pillaged and looted. But the Dutch people used to say that too, that the British were as bad, or maybe sometimes worse, at looting than the Germans were.
What type of things would they want to take?
Radios or watches or something maybe worthwhile. I had a chap in my section, he was coloured, Johnny De Google. He was from Trinidad in the Caribbean, and he ended up in our mob. But he was a very useful character to have. And I know he would go out looting, and he'd come back with some spoons, silver, or plate, or whatever, but he didn't keep it whole. He had a blowtorch, and he would melt it down, and it just looked like a black lump of coal. And he would put that in his bag. So eventually, when he got back home, he would have this silver.
Why was he so useful to have?
He was good at looking after our clothing, sewing, stitching, laundering, fetching water, digging latrines. He would do anything so willingly. Some jobs you sometimes have to ask someone to do, and they weren't very willing. You ask him to do something distasteful, it was no problem. He would get on with it. That was Johnny De Google.
He was a private, was he? Was he a private?
No. He had a stipe. He had one stipe. And I got him. They were having problems with him because some of the lads didn't want to be with him. So Captain Alistair Gordon, who was my captain, asked me how I would get on with Johnny De Google as a Lance Corporal if I took him. I said, okay, I know he's a good yes man then. So he came to me, and I found him easy. He was so easy to get on with and do things, and my section found that he was worth having, because if they wanted anything done, he would do it for them.
Why did the others object to him?
Some of them objected to having a coloured man telling them what to do. But then he could do it. Yeah, that's why he got his stripe. Johnny De Google. I remember one time, somewhere, we were both in slit trenches, which had been dug by the Germans before that. And we had been getting direct hits all around. And Johnny had a pillow which he had picked up somewhere, a cushion like that, full of feathers, to lie on, make his head comfortable. And it burst. And there was bushes, bubbly slit trench. It was absolutely covered in white feathers. And later on, when Johnny came out of this hole he was in, he was green. He was black normally, but he was green with fright. And his feathers everywhere.
Did the Germans have much air power, which did you much damage?
No, not latterly. They didn't have a lot of air power. In Normandy, yes. And they gone over the Channel. You see quite a lot of air activity. But there was plenty of Allied air force there to deal with them.
When you were in Germany, when you were passing through Germany, Did you ever come across very young German troops or paramilitary people?
Very young. Teenagers. Just boys. And I remember one crossroads somewhere in Holland. There was the Hermann Göring Airborne Division came up against us, but they weren't airborne, but they were airborne troops in training, but they arrived just on foot or on trucks, I don't know, to defend this crossroads. But we took most of them prisoners. But they were so smart, because they were just straight out of training college with clean uniforms, all pressed and clean, and just young boys and taken prisoners at some crossroads somewhere. There was a monastery nearby, and there was a lot of bodies all lying about, and they were being lined up for burial. And one of the monks from this monastery was going about and he was counting them, and I remember he came up to me and he said, "It was a good score. There are more Germans than there are British lying here dead." So that was his attitude. He thought that was a good score, this Dutch monk.
What was the attitude of the young German teenagers? Was it different from the older soldiers?
Yes, they were just children. They were glad, I think, when it was finished. See, they weren't indoctrinated the same as the real Nazis. They were never repentant. Even after they were taken prisoner, they were still... I couldn't describe it. They were wicked.
Did you feel sorry for these teenagers?
Well, there was one young boy I was very sorry for. He was lying beside the road, beside a wall, and the whole of his side of his head was gone. And it's the only time ever I've seen a brain. His whole brain was just there. And he was just a boy. And I thought, what a shame. And the war was, by this time, nearly finished. This was still somewhere back in Normandy. And I had been detailed, along with a section, to stand by this command truck for instructions. And of course, there was no building nearby. We had to dig in and put a gun sheets over the top. And it was lashing down rain and cold. And I think we'd been there for about 3 days, and miserable and cold. And NCOs always had a motorbike for mobility. And I had one, and I said to the command officer in the truck, "I'm going way back, see if I can get some food for my crowd. They've been sitting here for 3 days, just with rations getting very low." "Okay," he said, "away you go, don't be long." So I got on this bike, and I went back a few miles, and I came in a van. And I had taken my shaving tackle with me, and I had a shave and cleaned up a bit, and I got some potatoes, and I was making my way back along this road, and there was a artillery fire going on, and a shell burst somewhere nearby, and it blew my motorbike to bits, and I got a piece of shrapnel about the size of a 5-penny piece, and it went into my left foot, above the sole of my boot, but under the sole of my foot, burning hot. And that was all that happened to me. The bike